Welcome to Credits Due, the podcast where we break down an actor's filmography one movie at a time. I am Ben Cron, and joining me, as always, is Tyler Owen.
There's a snake in my boot.
And Neil Potter.
I want David Attenborough to narrate my life.
And welcome to the show, everyone. We got a great show for you today. We are talking about the 2004 sci-fi crime slash possibly a comedy. I'll argue that this is some funny ass shit going on in this movie. Of course, we're talking about iRobot. Directed by Alex Proyas, it stars Will Smith, Bridget Monaghan, and Alan Tudyk. But as always, we'll start with some film trivia about the movie. We'll dive into a spoiler-filled discussion on iRobot, ending, as we always do, with some final thoughts on Will Smith, and then we'll leave you with some recommendations. So, but first, even before that, we have some movies that we missed. We'll always talk about some Will Smith movies before that were in between the movies that we do a deep dive on. And on this episode, we have one movie. So, Neil, do you want to take it away with this movie?
Absolutely. The one in question is 2002's Men in Black 2, starring essentially the main cast of Men in Black 1. You've got Will Smith and what's his face?
Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones. Yep, Tommy Lee Jones. And the rest of the gang back again. Also, another Barry Sonnenfeld came back and directed this one as well. And it just kind of takes place kind of a few years after the first one. Except, you know, in the first one, Jay totally flashed K. So, like, he neuralized him. That sounded wrong. Just flashed him out, right?
Yep.
But he neuralized him, so he's not part of the Men in Black anymore. So he's been trying to do things on his own. And then kind of stuff gets too hairy for him. Things from Kay's past comes back, and they need to essentially restore his memory and to stop the threat in this one, who happens to be a snake monster or something that is actually Laura Flamboyle. She's fine in this, but her sidekick is Johnny Knoxville, a big 2002 staple. He was good stuff.
This was like his big film debut, wasn't it?
Yeah, from what I recall, yes. And he's essentially in it twice.
Oh,
he's
right.
Him and then his alien floating head that also lives in his backpack.
Oh,
it's disgusting.
I forgot about that.
It also stars Rosario Dawson, who is kind of the, kind of lady in distress. And, just alien hijinks ensue. There's a lot more emphasis on the pug, Frank, and the worm guys who love coffee. So they're a big part in this, and that is not to its benefit. They're not my favorite parts of the movies in general. I guess I get why you'd put them in, because they were kind of neat, but only as little side things, not as like main plot characters at all. But I don't know how much you want me to expand on it. It's not nearly as good as the first one, and it's not as good as the third one. It's the worst one of the three. But yeah, it's got some good humor in it. A lot of the stuff revolving around Tommy Lee Jones again, because like he was like stone faced in the first one, but he's almost even more so in this one because he's just a regular guy who works at a post office essentially, and then gets like brought back into the fold slowly. But like, what's funny about his character in this is that like You think he's back. Like, you think, oh, yeah, old K's back. He remembers everything. But he doesn't. He's like this. He's just a mailman. He's like, I'm just going along with this. I got like nothing better to do. Like, let's just see what's going on kind of a thing. And that's kind of where like the humor comes out of it. And then eventually, spoiler alert, he does remember. And he's back, baby. And then they stop the main threats at the end. It's not as good, but it's got some funny stuff. And then Neuralizer moments in this one are also hilarious. So check it out for some hilarity, much like the first one. But you're not going to be as pleasantly surprised with this entry in the Men in Black series.
It's been a long time since I've seen Men in Black 2. And yeah, I remember it being... I remember it being very forgettable. And I actually liked, I mean, I guess we'll talk about it later on in this series, but I guess we'll talk about it, or I guess we'll talk about Men in Black 3, which I actually really liked. But
same.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but there is a Will Smith song at the end of Men in Black 2, correct? Was that song?
Asking the important questions.
It's the only question I have.
It's not as good as the first one. Like, the first one is, like, iconic to me. That here comes the Men in Black. And this one is just, it's not the same. I get why they did it, I guess. But, like, it was in his, I'm trying to think, this isn't the last one he did a song for, is it?
Oh, God, I don't even know.
That's a
I
good
don't
question.
Think he, I don't think he did one for the third one.
I don't think so.
Hmm.
Oh, man. If so, it's because like that trope was waning out or something at this moment, or Will Smith just didn't want to be associated with that anymore. I'm not really sure. Mm-hmm.
A turning point in his career.
So true.
The day he stopped doing theme songs.
He didn't do anything for Hitch, did he?
Oh, God.
I don't think so.
I have no idea.
I hope so.
Because, like, just looking through his movies here, I don't think there's that might be his last one, was Men in Black 2. Ah.
Yeah. Well. And I was going to check out Bad Boys 2, and then I saw that movie was 2 hours and 28 minutes long. So maybe we'll get to it before the next episode. But in the meantime, Neil's coworker, no.
Wow. Yeah. Suck it, Mark.
Hopefully we will get to that movie. I would like to watch it, and because I've heard it's better than the first one, but who knows if that's true. But either way, let's get to the main event. Let's talk about some iRobot. But first, Tyler, you got some film trivia for us.
Yeah, as usual, I've got 4 bits of trivia from the film iRobot. And one of them I have made up completely, and you guys are going to have to tell me which one it is. So, number one, the shower scene originally included full frontal nudity. Producers digitally removed it at the last minute, fearing the MPAA would object. This ended up being the most expensive CGI shot overall.
No way.
Number two, the film was in pre-production when The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, was originally released. The production team was so impressed with the digital character of Gollum that they decided to shelve the project until they could get access to the same technology that was used. Andy Serkis was even asked to play Sonny, but he declined. Number three, no reshoots were required, a rarity for a movie as big as this. And number four, the only other film to directly reference Asimov's 3 laws of robotics is Bicentennial Man, starring Robin Williams. All right. Which one do you guys think I have made up?
I can't believe that Will Smith would be shown as junk. I'm going to have to say that first one is false.
All right.
Oh, God. I'm going to go with the one about the two towers. Yeah. I don't think that this movie was shelved because of that.
All right. And Ben, you would be correct.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
was the fiction.
Yeah.
Yes, you didn't fall for the trap of that insane actual piece of trivia.
That is nuts, actually. I almost don't believe that.
I almost don't either, and I even had to do a little extra research to figure out what was going on there. It was listed in the IMDb trivia section, like almost word for word what I said about there being full frontal nudity and the producers having to remove it and it being the most expensive CGI shot. I searched for it and found an interview with Will Smith, but it was a text, like, typed out interview. And so I have no idea if that quote, he said all those things, but I have no idea if he was joking or not. So I'll toss that up to being a real quote that he said. I have no idea if it actually happened.
Okay. Yeah, I find that hard to believe. I just think he was just touting how big his dick was. It took that much CGI.
Had to have been.
I mean, I could believe it. I mean, this movie wasn't rated R, though, was it?
No, PG-13.
Yeah, so there's no way that was the only thing they edited out. Like,
yeah.
I'm definitely leaning towards not it not being true either, but...
There's not even, like, curse words unless...
Yeah. No, like, yeah, it's weird. But anyways, it was a real quote from Will Smith. Yeah.
It's so weird because it's, I just don't believe it because there's two shower scenes and they're almost identical and they're far away, I think.
Yeah.
And well, actually, I guess because the one with the woman with Bridget Monaghan, I guess she's like, her like shower door is like all steamed over, but I guess you can see Will Smith's body, right?
Yeah, you can kind of see a most bit of his butt too, and I don't think he like turn. He's like sideways though, so you can't really see anything. But
if he wasn't standing awkwardly, his penis would be showing.
Yeah,
he's got like his one leg up that's in front of the camera, like just it, up enough.
Is that
something.
The closest we've come to seeing Will Smith's dong?
No, Wild Wild West was very close because there was in between leg
shot. That's close.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, stop me.
thanks for keeping track of that, Ben.
He's got the list.
Okay. Stop me if this is TMI. All right. Let's stop recording. Everyone, stop recording this. Okay. But in the movie Gone Girl, you've guys seen Gone Girl, right?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, spoiler alert for Gone Girl. But there is a shower scene in Gone Girl, and this is like a big news story for some reason beforehand. So like when I was watching the movie, it was in the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was not very closely watching, you know, Ben Affleck's body for this.
You had a printed out copy of the article and you were reading it with a flashlight while watching. I got it.
Yes, yes.
In a public theater. Continue.
So to quote, to borrow a phrase from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Ben Affleck drops dong in Gone Girl. And it is like a millisecond that you can see it, but you can see it. And it's the weirdest thing ever. But... I always find it fascinating. Shower scenes in general because they're so awkward. And both this movie and God, okay, we're not recording, right? It's so awkward. The scene in this movie and in Wild Wild West are so awkward because it's just like if you just crop the film like just a little larger, like just a centimeter larger than it is, you can like totally see the tip of Will Smith's dong. And That's weird.
And this has been your Mr. Skin update. Yes. Thank you very much, Ben.
Now, am I wrong in remembering that he has no shower curtain on his shower in that scene?
Yeah.
It's just like a standing tub with a shower, like, head.
No, it's a stall.
He's getting water
isn't it?
All over his floor.
It's one of those, like, weird open, like, glass showers, I think, right?
I couldn't see what was going on, but it looked like he was just, like, spraying water all over his bathroom.
It's very weird because his apartment is just, like, a shit show, and it's, but, like, I remember his bathroom being, like, amazing, like, something you would only see millionaires have. in the rest of the movie where Will Smith isn't naked. So this movie, just to set it up, this movie, it takes place in 2035 Chicago, and it is about a, from the plot synopsis on IMDb, is about a technophobic cop investigates a crime that may have been perpetrated by a robot, which leads to a larger threat to humanity. So this is Will Smith. He plays Del Spooner, in Will Smith's like quadrilogy of like he's just a shitty cop, right? Yeah. Like this is Bad Boys and like I guess Men in Black in some cases. What other cop movies has he been in?
Well, he's like law enforcement in
Enemy of the State.
Well, he's a lawyer.
No, he was
in
a
that.
Lawyer.
And then, well, Wild Wild West,
oh, yeah,
he was
right.
like a sheriff
he was
sort
the sheriff.
Of dude.
Independence Day, he was in the military.
But yeah, this is like the same, almost the same character as Bad Boys. He's just like this cop who like, doesn't follow the rules and like is just kind of shitty, and also like to use IMDb's phrase, technophobic. He's very racist towards robots, and the film starts with him. The film starts with him seeing a robot like running down the street with a purse, and he chases the robot down, thinking that the robot stole the purse, but really the robot was just the servant of this old lady, and the robot was fetching her inhaler. Yeah. And in a very weird scene that this like racism that Will Smith has, or this prejudice that Will Smith has, only like escalates like 100-fold throughout the movie. Like Del Spooner is like, he's not an unlikable character, he is like a hateful character, and the movie never tries to make him likable at all. It, like maybe until the end, but
he wears a sweet pair of Chucks, man. Yeah. That's pretty awesome, you know, vintage 2004.
Oh my
by
god. So this is his, what brand were they? They weren't Adidas.
Converse.
The yeah. like weirdest ass product placement that just like, that also keeps like three people tell him that he has sweet shoes.
He has awesome shoes. Can we talk about, well, do you want to get into the movie more? Do you want to talk about his prejudice towards robots?
Yeah. I mean, I think we can dig into that, but whatever you want.
I want to dig into that real quick here, because there is an incident in the movie which kind of makes him kind of go that way. Like, it's an incident that involves one of these robots. And to me, the incident in hand doesn't like warrant him feeling the way against robots as he does.
Really?
Not at all. Like, I don't think, like,
why don't you explain the scene and then
okay. So essentially what happens that makes Will Smith like despise and not trust robots is that, so he was on the, he was driving down the road at night or whatever, and there was like this car with a family or a woman and her daughter like around them in the mm-hmm. vehicle, in a separate vehicle. And apparently a truck driver just kind of fell asleep at the wheel and forced them both into the water.
And I think the truck driver was drunk, right?
I don't recall. He's either drunk or tired mm-hmm. or something. He did fall asleep. He mentions that. Yeah, I don't know. He mentioned that this truck driver was like, you know, just an honest guy, and yep. it was like a mistake or whatever. But like, so his car and this woman's car go in the water. The woman dies on impact, and the cars are slowly sinking. His car is just above the now with the car that has just the young girl in it. And a robot, a previous version of what Sonny is in this movie, happens to see it and jumps in the water, and due to, you know, calculations, sees Will Smith is the most likely to survive if he can rescue him. So he does that. Like, the robot rescues Will Smith, but doesn't have time to rescue the girl, and she dies. And that would, like, makes him not trust robots. But, like, wouldn't... I feel like logic kind of trumps his feelings on that. Like, obviously this movie is built to make him right, but
yes, I think yes and no. I think it's weird. It's weird because they're in a future where everyone has automated cars, that Will Smith seems to be the only person who actually drives his car.
Mm-hmm.
And that technology, like, basically would have mitigated accidents like this one to not happen. And then, Will Smith says that the robot, or he had a 44% chance of survival, and then the girl only had 11% chance.
Right.
And so that's why the robot saved him first. And I'm kind of torn at this, because I think Del Spooner is so hateful towards these robots, and this story I think does not help me get on his side. And also just the way, like, you're almost supposed to hate robots, like, along with him, but it's so obvious that there's someone pulling the strings, whether it's human or an AI, which we learn at the end of the movie. But I could never get on his side. And the, like, big reveal of this whole thing is, like, did not help me at all. But
all right, guys, I'm going to defend this movie until I'm blue in the face.
Oh, shit.
So I love this movie, like, unashamedly love this movie. I think that it does a pretty good job with the main character and his motivations. I think one of the things you said when we first started recording was important, though, in getting the context for that. And that's that what kind of, like, genre does this movie fit into? And I think that a lot of the moments that you're pointing at as, like, him being so hateful and prejudiced, I think they actually did a pretty good job playing him off as comedy bits. Like, you're supposed to be laughing at him for how silly and over the top his character is, like, prejudice against these things. And while some of them don't, like, land exactly as jokes, it is playing up the, like, it's a little larger than life, you know what I mean? Like, this isn't like a super realistic portrayal of the future. I actually really buy his reasoning for it. And he actually kind of, there's another line he says during the movie, I think, too, something about treating them at, like they're just toasters or whatever. And he says, well, your toaster can break, can't it? And I think that gives you an insight into what he thinks about robots. Like, I may be remembering that line incorrectly, but he's not really thinking about it in terms of, like, he thinks that robots are evil. He just understands that they are a thing that could malfunction. And mm-hmm. he thinks that everyone else trusts them too much, and they don't understand. It's like, I mean, you could make the same analogy with a lot of stuff happening now. Like, people trust Facebook too much, or they trust, you know, there's the woman just the other day who was supposed to be the driver of Uber's autonomous vehicles, where she was looking down at her phone. Oof. And the vehicle failed and hit a person crossing the street and killed them. And so this is kind of what I feel like the movie is trying to demonstrate, that we trust our technology too much. And mm-hmm. and not only that, but this movie's plot is so well constructed for an action movie. And I'm going to say this right up front. It is a B movie. Like, it knows what it is. It's not like a super deep, like, crazy, mind bending, like, you're going to talk about this for weeks kind of movie, but it is like the perfectly constructed action movie plot that has, like, these nice little twists and turns in it. And we'll talk about it, I'm sure, about, like, the realization where he understands that he was meant to investigate this crime because the person knew he would hold this prejudice against them, which would help him find the problem before anyone else could. So I like all those pieces to me come together really nicely.
Man.
That's well summarized. And I'm going to have to start by kind of saying I also enjoy this movie. I think I like its humor in it is actually pretty good, and it's like a solid kind of action movie. I'm just going to preface that into going into further discussion.
Wow. Okay. So I have a question for both of you. So I have seen this movie only once before, and it was probably on television, and it was probably not in one sitting, but it sounds like you guys have seen this movie before, possibly several times.
Yeah, several times.
At least twice. Yeah. I saw it in theaters and probably at least once after that.
Okay. Oh God. I don't want to be the guy that just shits on this movie, but I'm going to do it. So I made the joke about it being a comedy because I generally do think the first act of this movie is really funny, like really fucking hilarious. But I don't think on purpose. I think every joke is awkward and misplaced, and I think some of the stuff that I laughed at that I thought were funny were not meant to be jokes.
Can you think of an example?
There's a lot of mentions of Del Spooner's ex-wife, which never came into play, but he's like, when he meets Bridget Monaghan's character, Susan Calvin, she's like a therapist or a psychiatrist, I think. And he's like, oh, you're a psychiatrist. Do you know my ex-wife? And he's just like making all these ex-wife jokes. They're so awkward. And those are obviously jokes, mm-hmm. I think, but, and some of them were funny, but it was like this. It was like this weird, like, wow, this person is a shitty human being. I'm going, like you said, Tyler, I'm going to laugh at this shitty human being. But I've never felt like, there was a turn that I got, that I could, like, side with this character as if he was, like, almost this anti-hero.
So I guess for me, the turn for him comes towards the end when he embraces Sonny's help. mm-hmm. and realizes that he couldn't have accomplished it without the help of a robot, one of the things he was so prejudiced against. And he was even the one that made the realization that the reason why he was given this investigation or it requested on the part of the hologram of the dead scientist was because he was being irrational. Like, I think he acknowledged that he was being irrational, but obviously, you know, that realization comes towards pretty far into the movie, so...
Yeah, that's like the last scene, isn't it? Or
yeah, close to it, yeah.
Yeah. And
I think it was when they find the CEO guy.
I don't know.
Guy.
I just that turn. Okay. Oh, find him dead and they realize Vicky, the AI, is the
right.
The big bad. Yeah, and that's pretty that's like right before the big actions, the last action scene. So that's pretty close to the end. But, God, I don't know. I just like, and that the realization that the scientist was using his prejudice to like propel the investigation forward. I don't know. I just didn't like that. I guess it's fine, but I feel like that realization wasn't fulfilling for me. And like this, I think the movie tries to build it up as like this mystery, and it's like kind of nothing. Like, and the like twist that that Sonny actually killed the scientist was just kind of like dumb, and I don't know.
I actually kind of like that part, Ben. I'm sorry. I went
no, yeah, please.
Yeah, I kind of did too.
Now, okay. Now, the one thing I think I can kind of side with you on maybe is that like, well, I don't know. I see it for the sake of the movie, the scientist who was quote unquote murdered or committed suicide was like, you know, used Will Smith's prejudice against the robots to help with investigation. Like, imagine if he was a worse detective or cop. Like, that would have that would have made this whole thing fail. But luckily, like, he's good enough, and he was the most prejudiced and also happened to be good enough to put puzzle pieces together. But, that kind of a thing.
Okay, but my problem is that, like, if so... Right when he's investigating this dead scientist, he goes up to the lab and he finds out that the window is like security proof. So like he assumes that a human could not break it and then jump out to the fall to kill himself from a fall, right? Mm-hmm. So he comes to the conclusion that it wasn't murder, and he immediately turns around and sees all these robots, and he was like, one of these robots threw the scientist out the window, which turned out to be right. But I feel like he hunted down Sonny, captured him, and then Sonny was supposed to be like shut down. And because Del Spooner hates robots so much, that wasn't enough for him. And so that's the only reason he kept investigating. But if like it's only that he like kept getting attacked by robots that this investigation kept going on. Like I feel like if it was just a big cover up and like no one bothered to like try to shut him out and like silence him, like nothing else would have happened. Like he would have never gotten to the case until like the robot uprising happened.
Well, so we find out later that the entity that is trying to shut him out is not a person. It's Vicky, this AI that runs a bunch of the stuff in the company that makes the robots. And so she's the one trying to kill him, basically. And we've already, like, we see, obviously, when her plan is unveiled later in the film, when she's basically going to kill anyone who tries to resist her taking over the world to prevent humans from harming each other. She obviously has no qualms about killing people. And as long as it's for the greater good, so to speak. And so I don't really see any, I guess I see that as being, maybe it's like excusing it a little bit, but it is, it's not something a human being would do, but it is something that it would do. Like she, in her mind, it's just easier to get rid of him than, like, you know, she doesn't have any qualms about it, I guess. But I think that he still would have followed just the trail of Sonny, because it wasn't about getting rid of a malfunctioning robot for him. It was about finding out why it malfunctioned. And he, like, he didn't want to just sweep it under the rug like everyone at the company wanted to do, and the CEO or whatever. He wanted to figure out why this happened and how to prevent it from happening again in the future, but nobody else seemed to care. And so I guess it just goes back to what I was saying about how he doesn't like hate the robots. He like hates what they represent, that like we're not relying on ourselves enough anymore, that like we trust this thing that was programmed by some dude in a cubicle who we don't know like what they could have screwed up. Like that's what he's trying to figure out. And I think he does good detective work in doing that. And then he gets met with this crazy robot that wants to kill him as along the way.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. I get that.
I think as for Sonny being the one who actually killed the professor too, I actually kind of liked that roundabout, like, kind of way they had to do it. That, like, that's the only way he could, like, conceivably get the attention of the right people to actually put a stop to what he knew to be the greater threat in Vicky. So I kind of liked how that all rounded out in the end.
Yeah, there's a lot of really cool, like, symbolic stuff in this too. Just the a few things in the climax where they're trying to take down Vicky. The representation of Sonny's second brain being literally where a human heart is really cool. Like that, I mean, it seems almost obvious, but it is a cool little touch. And then like the fact that he's made out of thicker or stronger alloys that lets him get through that force field at the end, like that this was all planned out. It wasn't just like in so many action movies like this, it feels like people are falling into solutions and like they just stumble upon junk. But I like that this whole, it required human beings acting and like pursuing the right path. But the Dr. Alfred Lanning, played by James Cromwell, he had this whole thing planned, you know, like it was his last resort to stop this from happening. He was like a prisoner in his own company. And so I thought that was really unique. And especially the hologram where it had limited responses it could give to different questions. I actually thought that was a really cool little touch. And especially the quote where he's like, you must ask the right questions. And then when he does ask the right question, he's like, and now that is the right question. I don't know. Little things like that in this movie are like, it just feels better than it has a right to be, I guess. I don't know. It's rare that I feel this satisfied watching a dumb action movie.
And yeah, I did like that stuff with the the scientist hologram, and that reveal of him, of like the camera spinning around and revealing that he's just this like flat image, and then his dead body is underneath it.
Yeah,
that was pretty cool. A couple things that I did like about this movie: Bruce Greenwood as Lawrence Robertson, the CEO of this robotics company. He mm-hmm. was a great actor and a great, he was a great, like, I guess, what would you call it? Because he's almost like perceived as the villain of the movie.
Yeah, he's more of a foil though. Like he just, yeah. he's an obstacle. He's not the, the force that they're up against. He's just something mm-hmm. in the way.
But I think he played the great balance of like, I think you're waiting, like I was waiting the whole time for him to go like full evil mm-hmm. and like reveal that he's like the mastermind behind all this, but he was still, he kind of played that gray area so well.
Yeah. He played that, the company executive who's overlooking stuff because he only cares about the bottom line. And like, mm-hmm. it's those types of, metaphor that I think are typically so trite and poorly done that I appreciate in this movie, like the comparisons to how we use technology, how the technologies are for mostly for profit and not like, even though they advertise themselves as being altruistic, like they really don't care about that stuff. They just want your money. I thought those mm-hmm. little bits were well placed throughout the film.
Yeah. And that's not at all relevant today, right?
I mean, right.
There's no companies that pretend they're tech companies, but they're actually advertising companies.
Yeah.
No. Never heard of it.
I'm obviously talking about Facebook and Google. Fuck those companies. They're really shitty. I use both their products. They're amazing. all right, let's talk about going back to things that really I scratched my head on. There is a early scene where I believe Will Smith goes to a house to investigate, and it's Alfred Lanning's house, right? Which is set to be demolished.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct on that? Okay. So he walks up
yes.
and he sees this giant machine, and he learns that the machine is there to demolish the house the next morning. But then when he walks into the house, it gets changed to that night, which is like within the hour. And he kind of goes into, investigates kind of just like the last moments that this scientist did at his house. And then the machine turns like into a transformer and just like destroys this house while Will Smith is in it. And going into this kind of just leads into, if you guys want to talk about the action, that this scene especially and majority of this movie, I thought the action was pretty terrible.
Oh,
like
man.
I thought it was poorly executed. It wasn't like thrilling at all. Even like this whole set piece of him in this house that's just being destroyed by this transformer is kind of a cool in premise of him like running, trying to escape while like the walls and the floor and the ceiling are all just like crumbling around him. But I thought it was just the moments that were supposed to be funny were not funny. The moments that were, the thrill, it was not thrilling. It was not suspenseful at all. Like, it did not work for me at all. And some of the later scenes with the robots worked better, but I just thought this movie just was executed very poorly. And maybe it's a mix of the CGI. Obviously, there was an insane amount of CGI in this movie, but I think it was a lot just the camera work and the like blocking of the action was just really just was lackluster to me. But what do you guys think?
As far as the action goes, like I didn't mind it a whole lot. Some of the CGI was a little meh. I kind of gave it a pass for the most part in this. I think the NS5s or whatever, like the robots that Sunny are, look like haunting. Like, why on earth would you want to have one of those in your house?
Yeah.
And I watched this on, I had like a DVD copy of this. Whoa. And it was, well, first off, the DVD was full screen. It wasn't even widescreen, so I watched it, which didn't add to the effect at all. But like the DVD cover is like the slip cover is Will Smith, and underneath is a picture of Sonny, and it is terrifying. Like, he's got a little smirk, and it looks awful. But like, there were some bits at the end where like where you get to see Sonny fight other robots, and I thought that was really cool. Yeah. How you would imagine those two types of robots fighting each other. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah,
how he would like jump and like tornado spin at this guy and then like headlock crush his head and shit.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the action scenes too for what they were. I'm gonna like couch everything I'm saying here as like a fully understanding that this is like a B-level movie. Like, it's not a heady or like particularly stylish depiction of anything, but it's certainly I think it definitely swings in a heavier weight class than it should. I think that like some of the really cool action sequences, like you said, the robot on robot action, I thought was actually pretty cool. But then I really loved the sequence towards the end where they're trying to take down Vicky and they're on those catwalks and they have these crazy like swinging camera shots that go around the catwalks. I've never seen that before, and I thought it was actually pretty cool. It wasn't like, it didn't really help you like ground yourself in what was happening at all. You couldn't make out a whole lot, but it just kind of, it was like a interesting depiction of the chaos that was happening around them, like how many robots there were and how like what they were up against, I guess. But I don't know, can't say it was a great shot, but it was different.
I thought those shots were nauseating. They do it like three.
I actually kind of agree with you, Ben, on that one. Like, they do look just too trippy, and you're like, ugh, a little bit. But like, they are interesting.
Yeah. I would agree that they're interesting. I think they did it one time before. I think they did it once earlier in the movie. I can't remember the context, but then that last scene with like the 100 robots, they did it like three times, right? Like,
yeah,
right in a row.
Two or three times, yeah.
It was, yeah, I just thought it was nauseating. It wasn't like artful in any way. I was just like, oh dear God.
If Christopher Nolan did it, I'd applaud him. But see, this one, no, thank you.
A side note on Christopher Nolan. I watched the hallway scene from Inception with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, like. You know, when they had they built a hotel hallway, mm-hmm. and they like moved it,
yeah.
like literally moved it back and forth. Apparently, what was it? High School Musical did that same exact thing.
Oh, really?
Are you guys familiar with the Zac Efron High School Musical?
Really?
Movie?
That's amazing.
I've never seen it, but.
For like a Koreans dance number, I guess.
Yeah, it's just him and I'm trying to find what song it is. I'm not sure what song, but it's just him, and he starts in a basketball in a basketball court, and it's only him. It's like a solo musical, and then he like walks out into the hallway of the school. And the like hallway starts to spin, and he's like starts walking on like the ceiling and the walls and shit, mm-hmm. like doing this choreographed dance number. It's pretty impressive.
Well, I mean, Stanley Kubrick did it first, so
yeah, true. In 2001, right?
2001 Space Odyssey, my favorite movie of all time. If you have not seen it, go watch it.
That's one of those things that It's kind of like when people talk about first seeing Star Wars and the opening crawl, when it's just this giant, the giant like Star Wars typeface, and then just John Williams, like insane score, how like people went nuts for that. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's still incredible, like with the new movies. Like apparently, because that's in 2001, it's like someone like is like walking and then they just like they start like walking on the ceiling, mm-hmm. right? Like the thing rotates to let them walk, but you can't see it rotating.
Yep.
And apparently people like watching old movies with that context of like how people were like freaking out about stuff like these visionary things that have just been done over and over again now.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty crazy.
Yep.
Also to bring,
I just want,
go ahead.
Well, I just watched that High School Musical scene. It is pretty baller.
Yes, it's truly baller. But yeah, to bring it back to iRobot, this was like a huge deal. The CGI work was a huge deal when this came out, right? Like, to have a like fully CGI character, like Fellowship of the Ring had come out before, and Two Towers, I think, right?
Yeah, Two Towers but, like, was 2 years before this, so.
Mm-hmm. And but still, like, just this idea of CGI characters and like the amount of CGI characters, mm-hmm. was pretty incredible, I think, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I got to give credit to Alan Tudyk too, because I really love his depiction of Sonny. It is its own real character. Like it, you can tell that it's not like he's playing this fine line between an automaton and a thinking, feeling being. And it works so mm-hmm. well, because like towards the beginning of the movie, you wonder like, well, this thing is just doesn't feel alive, you know, like it. Mm-hmm. But then the things it says and the little things it does are just like, it's just like, whoa, OK, that's kind of cool. I really appreciate his depiction of like this first robot with a conscience, essentially.
I agree. Yeah. I think I like his voice mm-hmm. too. He just knows how to play a robot really well.
Yeah. He really does.
Yeah, I would agree too. I think Alan Tudyk was pretty incredible in this movie. And the CGI work, especially on Sonny, is pretty great. They really show a lot of facial expressions mm-hmm. in that character that I think really help that character out.
Oh, yeah. I gotta call out the scene that is like a twist within a twist, where you think that Sonny is like being convinced of Vicky's position to overtake humanity, but it ends up being a ruse that he's pulling, and he winks at Detective Spooner. And I just like, that's one of those moments that it's a moment that is absolutely qualifies it as both a B movie and yet a really damn good B movie. Like, it's cheesy as fuck, but it's played so well in the moment. And like, you really bought it. Like, he was like, oh shit, like, we're now gonna, how are we gonna have Sonny still be on their side? Like, he legit looks like he's, you know, being convinced through logic, because he's a thinking being, similar to Vicky, like that he's, oh shit, he's gonna be against us now. And then it's like, oh, the wink.
and what I think what made that work too is that they referenced that very early in the movie and then never again until then. So they went into a good length about it. Like, Spooner winks at his, you know, his sergeant or whatever at the police department. And then the first question Sonny asks him is, what was that thing you did with your eye? And then he just briefly explains it. And then they never beat it over the head. So if you just remember that faint little bit towards the end, and then you see that again, you're like, I enjoy that. Good for
Chekhov's
him.
Wink.
God.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I just had like a huge grin on my face after he winks. I'm just like, fuck yeah, he's still good.
I gotta kind of fight back on, you keep calling this a B movie, and I think that there's a large difference between a B movie and a just poorly executed movie. Because I feel like this movie never felt like it was kind of just being slock. It was just, I think it was really reaching for some larger social commentary that it didn't understand and couldn't it couldn't articulate very well.
Okay, I guess I can kind of relate to that, and I guess maybe it just comes down to our difference in defining what is a B movie, because sure. To me, at least in science fiction, I'm thinking of A movie, like A tier movies, as like Inception and The Matrix. Like those movies shot really high, and because of that, they either when they succeed, they do so stupendously, and when they fail, they fail miserably. Whereas I feel like mm-hmm. this movie did not shoot as high, yet it achieved basically what it set out to. Like, I really don't think that this movie was trying to be a sci-fi classic in the same way that The Matrix was or something like that. You know what I mean? And I guess that's where I delineate between the two. It was safer than those movies, and it did mm-hmm. that well enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess so. But I mean, even the Matrix and Inception they're trying to be, a great action movie, but they have a great commentary behind it. Mm-hmm. And not every movie has to be The Matrix or Inception. That's not what I'm saying, mm-hmm. but I'm also saying that I feel like there's a difference to being oh yeah, we're just going to have some dumb action and we're going to have Will Smith fight like 100 robots and it's going to be awesome. And I don't think that's what this movie is.
Okay. Well then I
don't think that's what this movie is trying to be.
Well, maybe I'm just using the term B movie wrong then. Cause I would say a dumb action movie is way less than a B movie. A dumb action movie is we don't really care about plot or story or anything. We're just going to show mm-hmm. you action scenes.
Mm-hmm. Like Expendables
3. Yeah, that's
3.
A dumb action movie. Expendables 3 is not a B movie. You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. So,
okay.
Yeah. And let's be real. The only B movie is the movie where Jerry Seinfeld plays a cartoon bee. So,
that is very true. That is very true.
Let's talk about Shia LaBeouf. Oh, let's bring it home, man. Why is he in here?
Exactly. So
I like.
So quick context.
This stuff,
quick context on Shia LaBeouf.
Go for it.
This movie came out a year before Constantine, the Keanu Reeves movie that we have talked about on this podcast.
He's the exact same character.
Exact.
But
he has three minutes
holy
of
shit.
He has 3 minutes of screen time in this movie, whereas in Constantine mm-hmm. he has 10 minutes maybe. So
maybe.
But yeah, let's talk about Shia LaBeouf and how that character was barely in. If he was in this movie 1 minute more, I'd say he was a character that did not work for me. But he's barely in this movie, so I can't even fault.
He's only there so Will Smith can tell him to quit cussing, and that's all I needed him for.
God, what a weird. Yeah, when he showed up at the beginning, I was like, oh, awesome. Another Shia LaBeouf sidekick role.
Yeah.
This is going to be fun.
Yeah, I was expecting more of him, even having seen the movie before. But I almost feel like he was probably in more of the movie and they cut a bunch of his scenes, but he was able to negotiate to prevent them from cutting his character completely, like so that he could have a credit in the film. That kind of feels like the only logical explanation for what he was, because they easily could have, you know, cut around him completely, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Entirely. Yeah.
So weird. Even though the last scene he's in where the robots are like taking over the city and the Bridget Monaghan's character like comes in and like shoots a bunch of robots with her eyes closed.
Yeah.
And him and Will Smith like freak out on her. That is a pretty good moment.
Yep.
So I'm glad they kept it in there.
It's like, I think he was only in there to be the leader of like the gang that fought a bunch of the robots outside, like a bunch of the pedestrians that happened to get in a tussle with all the rampaging robots. They're like, we need a leader of this.
Yeah.
How about a Shia LaBeouf?
Was that even Stevens kid?
He was that, he was that like one, he was the one person in this movie who felt like part of the ensemble of any other disaster movie.
Yeah.
You know, like you can imagine his character having the same amount of screen time in a movie like Independence Day, where like he's one of 12 people where we're getting their perspective for a short amount of time.
He's exactly. He's that drunk. Who's the drunk in Independence Day?
Randy Quaid.
He's like the drunk. Yeah, he's Randy Quaid's kid.
Yes. Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yep. All right, let's wrap this up. Do you guys have anything else you need to say about iRobot?
Not about iRobot. but I wanted to, maybe this is a topic for a different time, but what's your opinion on the director Alex Proyas?
Oh, I looked up what else he's done, and I after this movie I was like, this movie is great. I really really enjoyed it. I'm going to look up this director. Oh, Gods of Egypt? Oh no.
Yeah,
that's his last one too.
Yeah, he did Knowing, which isn't that the shit, Nicolas Cage?
Yeah, that's a weird fucking movie too.
But he also did Dark City and The Crow.
I've never seen either of those.
I've seen The Crow, and for being it's dated, and you, I know they're trying to reboot it with Jason Momoa, but like it's about like goth, so like it's just not gonna fly like these days, I don't think. But I remember it being pretty good, and Brandon Lee's good in it. But Dark City, like some people, like that's like a cult favorite of a lot of people, and I watched it once. I'm like, this is fucking weird and stupid.
Yeah, I've seen that, and it was back in college though, and I think at the time I thought it was weird and stupid too, but my tastes in film have changed a lot since then, so I may have to revisit it at some point.
Sure.
Kiefer Sutherland and Jennifer Connelly and William Hurt, can't go wrong with that. Oh, well, Rufus.
Who knows?
Rufus Sewell? I don't know if that's. Is he like the main character?
Yeah.
He's a pretty good actor, too.
He's the main guy.
I have to.
But that's all. Yeah, maybe check out some of his stuff, because, like, I don't know. I'm not. Judging by his work, I don't like a lot of his work. So, like, iRobot's perfectly fine, but, like, I know he's made some pretty cult classics that are not in my, like, not my cup of tea.
Yeah, this iRobot did not do him any favors in my eyes, but I have heard a lot about both The Crow and Dark City. Maybe I'll have to give those a shot. Gods of Egypt and Knowing, though, like, fuck those movies.
Yeah.
But let's get into final thoughts. I'll run mine off quick so you guys can share yours. So for final thoughts, for every movie we give Will Smith a rating, from 1 to 5 Wills. This movie, I gotta give this movie a 1 Will. I did not like it at all. There, very few things worked for me. I thought Will, we haven't really talked about Will Smith, but I thought he was very, like, he gave the bare minimum Will Smith performance. He barely had enough charisma in that you would expect from Will Smith. I thought his jokes, the, like, signature Will Smith jokes were just not there. And then the action really fell flat for me. So that's one will for me. So Tyler, what about you?
All right. So yeah, I'll focus my comment. Since we didn't talk much about Will Smith, I'll say the same. So yeah, I think if I were just rating the movie, I'd probably rate it a little bit higher, but I'm going to give it 3 Wills just because I think you're right that, that Will Smith wasn't really at the top of his game here. I think that the most of the parts of the movie I did like were not like dependent on him being cast in it at all. I could easily see someone else playing this part and I would enjoy the movie just as well, which is not something you typically say about a Will Smith movie. But yeah, I'm just going to give it 3 Wills. Just because I think some of the comedy bits did land for me, but only because of his delivery, and because they weren't actually as well written as some of his other films. And I think that his characterization of Detective Spooner was a little bit better than you thought in his motivation. And I didn't necessarily find him likable, but I found him relatable. And I liked his journey throughout the film and his eventual realization that, you know, he could trust other people, including other robots. So, yeah, it was really, really fun. I, despite only 3 Wills, definitely go check this out if you haven't seen it or if it's been a long time since you have. I actually think it holds up really well, despite a few like CGI little quibbles here and there. But yeah, really fun ride.
I'm going to mostly agree with Tyler. I think it holds up well enough, but Will Smith is more or less replaceable. I'm going to give him 2.5 Wills. I'm going to go with that. Kind of along the same thing, you know, Tyler said for the most part. But I didn't hate the movie. I still have fun watching this. So, like, I think I'd recommend you see it too.
Very cool. All right, so let's do some recommendations. Every episode we'll give you some recommendations that don't necessarily have to be movie related, but just some things that we think you should check out. So Tyler, you want to lead us off with your recommendation?
Yeah. So I think in a previous episode, one of us recommended Annihilation, right?
Yes.
Back when that was in theaters, my wife and I went to go see it in a different town that we were delighted to find out had these crazy new reclining theater seats. And Yes. It was fucking awesome. And I was like, we were both walked out of that theater and we were like, oh, God, this is going to be hard to go back to our theater in our town because ours is just the standard, like, kind of stadium seating stuff where you can lean back a little bit, but it's not super comfortable. And so this last weekend, I went to go see Pacific Rim Uprising in our theater here in town. And somehow, in the span of like 2 weeks, they had upgraded two of the theaters and put in these reclining seats. And I was like, fuck, yes. And so I got to go see Pacific Rim Uprising, sequel to Guillermo del Toro's film Pacific Rim, giant robots fighting giant lizard things in these excellent, amazing reclining seats. And I'm going to have to recommend the combination because I think that's the only way I could rationalize recommending going to see Pacific Rim Uprising unless you are a huge fan of the first one. my thoughts on the film in general, I actually really enjoyed it on its own, but like I said, it was even better just in these like rumbling, subwoofing theater reclining seats. If there's anything I can compare it to, it's kind of like if the first Pacific Rim was like a Godzilla, like Japanese mech movie with Godzilla, then Pacific Rim Uprising is an epic episode of Power Rangers. So I don't know. You guys seen the first Pacific Rim? Do you guys like it?
No.
Yeah, I actually, I liked it quite a bit for the time. Like, I enjoyed it.
And see,
that's
to me, this is another example of like, this is a B movie on a different level, like one that is that knows it's kind of bad and it's like a little tongue in cheek, you know. This one is definitely more the same. If you really enjoyed Pacific Rim, you're gonna like the sequel. It's there. I feel like the trailers actually don't do it justice. I was expecting it to be terrible, but it was actually super enjoyable. I don't really get some of the criticisms. I think it's an example of people hating a thing before they walked in because of the changes that were made. Like people who were upset that Guillermo del Toro wasn't directing this one, I feel like they went in ready to hate it. But really, it's, I don't think Guillermo del Toro was the reason the first one was good. It's just a random fun movie, and this one is more the same. So, yeah, if you are up for just a crazy, bombastic action movie with crazy giant robots and stuff, definitely check it out. And do it in a subwoofer crazy seat that feels like you're getting punched in the ass.
Yeah, that's my favorite feeling. We're getting a theater in my local area that is getting that. A whole brand new theater is going in where an old one was, and that's going to be the one with those sweet seats in it.
So good.
I'm excited.
Yeah, they're pretty incredible. Those, I have heard people sneak blankets in, and they wear them as scarves, and then just like, when they get in the theater, they just recline, take this, you know, pseudo scarf off and just use it as a blanket.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Neil, how about your recommendation?
I picked a very topical recommendation today. My wife and I got a Roomba, a little robot that vacuums our house. And I love it. We have two dogs, one that sheds just incessantly. It's just terrible. So, like, I have this thing set to run every day, and I've seen, like, the amount of stuff I have to sweep up just get reduced exponentially. Just if I clean this thing out a couple times a day, and it's a godsend. Like, if you've got, like, I've got all hardwood floors, which I think it works well with. So if you have carpet, it's probably not going to do it justice, but I've got all hardwood floors and it gets under spots. Like, I have an island in my kitchen that it can get under that I can't get like a broom under very well. And also a couple little other like pieces of furniture like that. And it's so nice being able for that thing to just zip right under there, sweep up all the dog hair, and I don't have to worry about it. And then it goes back to its station, charges, and gets ready for the next day. Mm-hmm. It's such a nice little feature. I
don't trust it, Neil. I don't trust it.
Yeah.
Well, when it kills me and, you know, you can say, I told you so. But right now,
just
I
wait until
it
runs over a dog shit and smears it all over your house.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
That's my worst nightmare. Luckily, my dogs don't have very many accidents anymore. So.
It's going to see you drop potato chips on the ground and decide that you're the real enemy of this house.
It's had enough.
The only way to save the floors is to kill Neil.
Yeah. it sucks all my guts out of my mouth.
Ugh. Oh, Jesus. So, quick question. Is this a brand name Roomba? Because
it's Roomba is a brand name. Mm-hmm. I did not get I can't remember what the brand of mine is, but it's the same general thing. Little circle vacuum that sweeps mm-hmm. your house.
Because I've heard that there's very expensive kinds of this thing, which like Roombas are, and then there's like cheaper kinds that don't work mm-hmm. as well. But it sounds like yours works perfectly.
Mine works perfectly well. I know Roombas can be like $600 to $800, yeah. but like we got ours on eBay, like brand new in the box. Essentially, I think it was like $250
oh, wow.
or something like that. So it wasn't like terrible.
And I would imagine for like you said, having all hardwood floors, it wouldn't really matter if it was like a super nice one. That'd be a lot easier to clean
yeah,
the
yeah.
carpet.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. Totally.
Very cool. So I have a double recommendation today. The first one, so The Last Jedi has come out digitally. I don't think, at the time of this recording, I don't think it's out on Blu-ray yet. But if you have not, first of all, I've watched that movie like 5 times in the past week. Damn, that movie is so good. But what I would like to recommend is if you have yet to buy that movie, make sure you get the one with all the special features on it, because they're truly incredible. And it comes with a behind the scenes documentary called The Director and the Jedi, which really it's a documentary that really focuses on the director, Rian Johnson, more than like all the cast kind of shows up, and there's a lot with Mark Hamill and like Daisy Ridley and all the cast, but it really shows a lot of Rian Johnson, his process of writing the movie and then like pre-production and filming and then post-production. And it is such an amazing, like well-documented behind the scenes look at this like massive movie. And two things that blew my mind while watching this documentary is it is stunning how much in The Last Jedi, how much practical effects are in that movie. So like, for example, the like sea cows that are on Luke's island that he gets milk from, you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Not CG, yes. Not CG. They built a like this like cow thing, and they had to fly them in with a helicopter.
Yep.
Oh my god.
To this to Ireland, where they were filming this, and it actually like shot out milk. Like when Mark Hamill walks up and he milks this creature, it's actually shooting out milk. It's insanity. And then like the tree, the like Jedi tree that's in that movie, that is in Ireland. None of it is obviously in Ireland. They basically built a set on the side of a hill in Ireland. And it's like none of it is like real, as in it's like actually there. It's all stuff that has been built by this production company. It's insane. And then the second thing that blew my mind is, and the thing that is crazy that Disney let this like documentary out, that is so, it shows like so many like it's so real. Like you can tell everything about it is real. Like no one is like faking about this movie. But Mark Hamill talks a lot about how he fucking hated the portrayal of Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm.
I had heard the rumors about that before the movie yeah. came out, and yeah. it kind of got me worried about it. Yeah,
he's openly talked about how he was he's unpleased, and I think still is unpleased, but how he talks about in this documentary about how he's not happy with it, and he and like Ryan talks about how it like really made him like go back and think about like what he wrote, and like he was like, I had to go back and like really question if I'm doing the right thing, you know, because the star of this movie doesn't like it.
Yeah.
And I think that just goes to how it also it's stunning, like knowing that he was not emotionally invested in this movie. Mark Hamill, it shows how just even more amazing that performance is, because I truly think he gives one of the best performances of his career.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously it's the difference between a professional and Ben Cron, the novice, that I can't imagine, like, just getting that amazing a performance out of yourself if you're just so unpleased with that character. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I'll piggyback on you real quick too. Speaking about the response that film has gotten and how the fan base is kind of divided, I recommended a long time ago here a YouTube series called Movies with Mikey, he did a really deep dive into the critical and fan response to The Last Jedi, and he contextualizes it with the responses that all the other Star Wars movies got when they were released. And he makes a really compelling case that this may end up being one of the best remembered Star Wars movies despite its backlash, because it's very similar to what happened with The Empire Strikes Back. Like, basically, people didn't like The Empire Strikes Back, which is now considered one of the best Star Wars movies, if not the best. Basically, people did not really receive it as great as it is now until after the original trilogy had completed and they understood its context in the 3-movie arc. And so it'll be really fascinating to look back on these new movies now a little bit down the road after people have kind of had time to digest it.
Yeah. And then also, I mean, I think all three of us liked that movie a lot, right?
Oh, yeah.
The Last Jedi.
Yep.
I think,
yes.
If you were not a fan of it, or if you had problems with it, I'd highly suggest listening to the director's commentary on the movie. And Rian Johnson, he recorded it before release. So it's all completely, it's completely separate from any feedback at all. And just the way he talks about Star Wars and like everything that he, like talking about past movies and all these characters that he used, like that guy is a fan. He obviously loves Star Wars. And I am in the Rian Johnson fanboy club, so my views on him might be a little biased because I've loved all of his movies, and just like watching this documentary and just seeing how he works is really inspiring to me. And it's kind of, I think it is such a blessing that a creator just like releases all this amazing, like behind the scenes stuff, with his movie, and just like commentary and deleted scenes. And there's commentary on every deleted scene, for this movie.
Yeah, he's not retreating in the face of the opposition he's gotten, which is, it's really cool to see him like, you know.
And that's, I think that just goes to, I mean, and both Disney too.
Yeah.
I think it goes to just the faith that they had in this movie, that they truly believed in the end product. And I think, like you said, time will tell. Now that it's out on like home video and people can go back and rewatch it, I think the backlash, I think, will be just forgotten about a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited to go back and watch it again. I have not yet since I saw it in theaters. So
yes.
Do you by chance know if it's available in 4K? Because I know that Rogue One and Force Awakens were not yet. Do you know what their plans are for that? Because that was weird to me.
It is available in 4K.
Okay.
Digitally, and I'm sure on Blu-ray it'll be available too. I have a question about 4K. So if I bought, I do not have, so I have an Xbox One S which can play 4K mm-hmm. content, movie content, but I do not have a 4K television. Mm-hmm. If I bought a 4K movie, would it play on?
Yeah.
HD?
Yep.
Would it play in HD?
It would downscale it, which is what your Xbox right. One S is doing with like all of its UI stuff anyways. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then almost every 4K movie I've seen so far is also coming with a Blu-ray copy anyways, like a regular HD Blu-ray copy anyways. So yeah. You'd always have that too. But yeah, you should be able to play it and it would just downscale it to your television.
Okay. I was wondering if I bought, because I almost bought it in 4K, but I was worried that if I would be streaming a 4K video, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
But that's something weird. I wish that digital movies would be like Netflix, where, you know, Netflix like changes quality based on like how much bandwidth it's getting. Mm-hmm. So if it can't stream in 4K or if it can't stream in like HD, it just doesn't.
Yeah.
Right. I wish I'm waiting for like a service to just be like, yeah, you buy the movie and you can play it in standard def, high def, or 4K, like whatever,
yeah.
whatever you're capable of.
I don't think you get how capitalism works.
Listen, Facebook, I will give you all my data if you just let me do this one thing. all right, my second recommendation is just a quick PSA. The podcast app Pocket Casts, Tyler, I know you use this.
Yep.
I'm a huge fan of this app. It's on, I believe, almost everything. It's on iOS and Android. It's even on Windows Phone, I think, still. And then there's also a browser version of it too. But they just released, if you are like me and you prefer to use apps over browsers, Pocket Casts just released a Windows 10 app in the Microsoft Store. Mm. And it is incredible. I'm kind of blown away how solid this app is, like right out of the gate. And it does cost money. I think it's $3 or $4 that you will have to pay. If you've already bought the web version, I believe you won't have to pay for the app.
All right, I'll be downloading right now.
Yes, because I just signed in. I downloaded it. I signed in. I didn't have to pay for it, but I had already bought in the desktop version.
Or the web version, one question for you. So my big thing about Pocket Cast that I love is that it syncs up your position in every podcast you're listening to, no matter what device you're on.
Yes.
The web version that I use while I'm on my desktop, if I like pick up an episode while I'm on my phone and I get further than where I am on the desktop version, I have to refresh the desktop version to get the synced positions. Do you know if the app will auto refresh your positions?
I do not know. I know when I signed in to the desktop, it synced all my unlistened to episodes and all my in progress episodes perfectly. Mm-hmm. So it might be better than the web version, but I haven't really jumped back and forth from my phone
yeah.
to the desktop yet.
I do that all the time and I get screwed over because mm-hmm. like I'll get further in the phone version. I'll come back to my desktop and I'll accidentally hit play on the episode again and it'll resync even my phone back to the old position to my because it doesn't go by which app is further along in listening. It just goes to whichever one it last listened to it, and so if you play from an old position it screws it up. But anyways, it's a great app.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that syncing stuff does kind of bother it. I kind of get that issue too. I wonder what the problem is. Yeah, if it's maybe just their sync, whatever they use for syncing just isn't quite up to snuff yet. Or I have problems with the Android app, how sometimes I'll reset it and it will just completely forget. When I like resync, it'll completely forget like any unlistened to episodes that I have.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's more of a phone issue, but
yeah, it's still head and shoulders above anything else I've tried. So
yes. Yeah. Same here. But yeah, if you're a hardcore podcast listener, like I am, I would highly recommend Pocket Casts. It's so great. So, all right, that will be it for this episode of Credits Due. Thank you everyone for joining us and listening in. I hope you will join us in 2 weeks for our next episode. We'll be talking about the rom-com Hitch, which I have never seen, and I'm very excited to watch this movie. So, I will put it in the show notes, but I have a list of all the movies that we're planning to watch for Will Smith over on my Letterboxd page. And it's a very good, like, IMDb-style social network, if you've never used Letterboxd. But I have a very handy list if you want to plan ahead to make sure that you've watched the movies that we're going to talk about. And I'll put that in the show notes. So it's a very easy, it's a very cool little website. And I got a list over there for the rest of the movies we're going to watch. So, and then until then, Tyler, you want to plug your stuff?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Tyler Owen. And hopefully by the time this podcast is published, I will have launched the first episode of a new podcast I'm doing with a friend of mine called the Bible Inspectors Podcast. It's a very niche idea, just a secular and skeptical review of a bunch of different biblical questions. We kind of go through and catalog a bunch of different answers from all the different Christian denominations and some perspective from Jews and Muslims on how the Bible should be interpreted. So come in and listen to that. It's called the Bible Inspectors Podcast. You can find it on BibleInspectors.com. My co-host on that show is a ex-preacher who's now an atheist. And so he's got a really interesting perspective and a ton of biblical knowledge. So it's really fun. Check it out.
Very cool. And I can put that link in the show notes too.
Sure.
If you want. So, Neil, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Dino Neilman. I have no other projects going on. Hit me up.
And you can find me over at Twitter at Kron Master. That's Kron Master. And you can rate and review this show on your platform of choice. We're on iTunes and Google Play. And you can also email us any questions. Maybe you have a fun project for Neil that you want him to tackle in the near future. Send those over to creditsduepodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, always remember, this relationship just can't work. I mean, you're a cat, I'm black, I'm not going to be hurt again.